Okay, so my computer says it's exactly on the hour, so I think we'll start going. And yes, this of course is Pesach related because it's the time, and I'm very impressed that so many people have got time, they've taken time out of their undoubtedly very, very busy cleaning schedules to come and do some learning. So I thought I'd look at something that very often doesn't get discussed or taught at all because it's at the end of the Seder. And of course, many of us get exhausted by that stage. And I have to confess that my family actually get to the songs at the end and they look at this particular one, which is a first night one, and they go, oh, let's skip that. We don't know a tune. And they go on to the bouncy later medieval ones, which are things like Kilonae, which everyone has tunes for. This, I personally don't know any tunes at all for this piyut, but this is the first of the set of songs that are after the Seder proper. In some ways, it's really sad that we skip it because it is a wonderful, wonderful poem. In other ways, I absolutely understand why we skip it because it's very difficult to understand. And nobody at the end of a Seder is going to sit down with a commentary and investigate this song. So this is the time to do it well before Seder night. And who knows, maybe you'll actually sing it yourselves this year if you don't usually, or maybe you'll find or invent a tune for it, in which case I really want to know because I've never found a tune that does fit. And maybe I hope you might get something out of it. And even if you don't actually sing it at your Seder, you'll know more about it than you did. So I'm hoping that will be useful in that way. Okay. So it is what is technically called a piyut, or often translated as a liturgical poem, which I have to say doesn't tell you much more. But we have a lot of these. They appear all the time in our davening. Sometimes we're not aware that actually what we're saying or praying is actually a poem, a later poem. Things like the lead up to the Shema. Eladonna Kolamazin, that is actually a piyut. It actually is a later poem that's been inserted into the prayers. People are very familiar with the special type of piyut that you sing at Shabbat meals, the zmirot, and they are a subcategory of piyut. And the other place you probably recognize them from is on the High Holy Days, because all those extra things we say, especially in the repetition of the Amidah, those are piyutim. Those are these liturgical poems. The most of them are quite early. Some are Middle Ages, but some really date back to the 4th, 5th, maybe 6th centuries. And it was a whole art form. The only trouble is it expected people who listened to them or participated in them to have a huge knowledge of definitely Tanakh, the Bible, but also of Midrash and possibly of other rabbinic literature, so various things from the Talmud as well. And most of us, speaking myself as well, don't really have that sort of knowledge these days. I do wonder whether actually it was only ever the elite, really educated, who could get every last nuance. But the piyut is a bit like a New York Times crossword. It's one of those things that you need to decipher and you need to get used to it. And it is a bit like a game. They're very entertaining. And you can have a lot of fun. But I think in today's context, what we need to do is look at them before we use them, and then you get a lot more out of them. And they are characterized by all sorts of inventive things that we see for the first time, a sort of poetry developing in Hebrew that is not biblical poetry. We see meter that isn't based on vowel length, but is based on bounce. Like in English, on rhythm, ta-dum, 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 ta-dum. That first turns up in the piyutim. We see word games. We see alliteration. There are various very famous piyutim where every word in each verse begins, say, all the first verse will, all the words will begin with aleph, all the second words will begin with bet. We see acrostics. This poem actually is an acrostic. We'll have a look at that in a moment, where when you read down the first line, this one's a simple alphabetical acrostic. So the first line starts with Aleph and the second line starts with Bet and the third starts with Gimel. But you have other piyutim where the author wrote their name in by doing that. So they'll say something like Yitzchak ben Avraham if you read down the different things. A very clever way of signing your poem because it can never be lost. So we have all these features of piyutim, and It's almost as though the authors are setting themselves a series of challenges. They say, okay, what will happen if I want to do stanzas of three lines with a chorus, and I want an acrostic, or I want a double acrostic, or I want a triple acrostic, where you have three words in each line that start with the same letter, and I want rhyme, and I want it on this theme, and I want to build in lots of biblical and midrashic allusions. Sorry, just going to mute somebody there. Right. And all these challenges, it's a bit like writing a very formal poem in English. If you, for instance, write a sonnet, there are rules. It has to have a 8 lines and then 6 lines, and there's various different formal types of rhyme pattern you need. And there's something enjoyable about setting yourself all these parameters and these limitations and then coming up with a work of art. And that's how Pioteen work. But you do have to do a bit of work about them. So first of all, let's think who wrote it. And it is an early one. It was written by somebody called Yanai. And Yanai is one of the three great makers of Pioteen, known as Paitanim. And if you think it sounds, by the way, like poet, you'd be right. This comes from the Greek. Paitan writes piut, and that is linked to the Greek word poetry, poietes. And Yanai was the second of the great three. He lived in the land of Israel, and nobody quite knows when he lived. Some people think 4th, 5th century, some people think 6th, 7th centuries, pretty early. And he was mentioned by various people, but until quite recently, we didn't have many of his poems. We had this one, we had a couple of others. But when they discovered the great treasure trove of Jewish manuscripts in the Cairo Geniza, they found a whole load more of poems by Yanai. And we now have about 800 poems by him, all Pioteen, all designed to be used in shul services or on Seder night or in some sort of context of praying. And they have been published. And he actually was quite an innovative Paitan. He was the first one to use rhyme, which doesn't appear in biblical poetry at all. I tried to find any evidence of the very first use of rhyme in any world literature, and I can't. Nobody writes about this, but I think the Hebrew use of rhyme in the 4th or 5th century is pretty early, so maybe we invented rhymes. I don't know. I can't promise you that, but we certainly started using them pretty early on. So he does that. And he also is the first person to use a name as an acrostic, and he loves the Midrash. So he piles on the Midrash and uses that a great deal. So this is the person who wrote it. And because it's difficult and obscure and full of illusion, people wrote commentaries on Pioteen. Well, you know, Jews, they write commentaries on just anything. At the moment you have a text, somebody's writing a commentary on it. And I've used one by Rabbi Ephraim ben Yaakov of Bonn, who died in 1132. No, sorry, was born in 1132. He was the head of the Bet Din in Bonn in Germany, and he taught in different towns in Germany, Mainz and Speyer and so on. He lived quite a long time in Bonn, and which he apparently left 3 days before there was a massacre there, so he was quite lucky, but he died fairly shortly afterwards. He wrote a book of remembrance about what had happened during the Crusades, and he wrote laments on the events of the Crusades when Jews were massacred. And he also wrote this whole commentary on Pioteen, which has survived. It's only been published. I don't know if all of it has been published, but certainly I found his commentary on the Pioteen in the Seder. I did find a copy of that has been published. And he was a very active scholar at the time, very well known. So I've used him a lot because this stuff is difficult and I couldn't do it on my own. And it's a very typical piyut. It's enigmatic. It uses a lot of code words. That's another thing that is very common in Pioteen. They don't say Avraham. They will say something like the first of the mountains. And you're meant to know that's Avraham. Or they'll say the lamb, when they mean Yitzchak, because you know he's almost sacrificed on the altar. Therefore, lamb is a code name for him. So a lot of code names are going to come up as well. We'll see those as we go through. And we are going to try and look at the text. I'm going to share it here. One second, actually. First of all, I'm going to post the, there is a link to it if you want to edit it yourself. And I'm just going to post that into the chat so that everyone can find it. OK. Okay, has that gone in? Yes, good. And I'll also do a share screen. Supposing I can find it. There it is. Yes. Okay, can everyone see that? I'm hoping. Give me a thumbs up. Yes, excellent. Righty-ho. So I've used the translation that Rabbi Shlomo Riskin had made, though in the interest of translation, he's not done an exact word-for-word translation. It's a bit sort of smoother than that.
Excuse me, Dr. Taylor Gutthardt. Thing is going around and around, but I haven't at least gotten the screen sharing. It's still black. The cursor is going around and around, but nothing has shown. Could you try?
Is anyone else having that problem?
Very visible.
Okay, so I guess it's spotty.
It's fine with me.
Okay, maybe try and reload it. Maybe if you just
That would be great.
Yeah. Well, it's up there, but maybe press on that link again, and maybe.
Okay. All right, I will try it. Thank you. I'm sorry.
No, not to worry at all.
We're seeing it in our family with a tune.
Yep.
I'm surprised you said there's no tune to it. We know it. I know a tune for it.
Oh, well, that's excellent. Oh, great. Well, you know, if we've got time at the end, maybe you can sing us the tune. We'll see how we go. Great.
Thank you again.
You're welcome. So it's generally known by its first line, Vayhi v'chetzi alayla, it was at midnight, which is really not part of the song. It's just sort of the intro, because it's really giving you the theme. Midnight. Okay, so midnight is going to be the theme of this whole poem. Okay, so we start off with, I'll just read a little bit in Hebrew, we won't do the whole thing in Hebrew. As rov nisim hifleta balayla, barosh ashmoretzem halayla, getzevik nitzachto kenechelaklo layla, vayhi bechatzi halayla. You can hear there's a certain rhythm going there. And you can also see that it is organized. You have three lines, and then you have the chorus, which is vayhi bechatzi halayla. It was at midnight. So again, we're reinforcing this midnight theme. You can also see the acrostic here. We've got Aleph. We've got, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav. 22 lines, because 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. So you can already see some of the structure and the way it's been organized. And also, every line ends with the word Laila, night. It might be Ba Laila, in the night, Ha Laila, the night, Laila, night. But there's some variation of Laila, sometimes with a prefix at the end of literally every line. That's the whole point. Okay. I'll just read the first stanza. That'll do fine. So the first two lines are an intro, and then we have lines 3 to 16, which are all historical examples of exciting things that happened at night. And then lines 17 to 22 are about the future redemption. And the way this poem is constructed, it says, look, we have all this evidence of us being saved at night. Therefore, building on that knowledge, we can confidently expect that the future redemption, the Ge'ulah, the coming of Mashiach, will happen at night, because we have precedent for miraculous things happening at night. So that's, again, a basic theme and argument of the poem. And you can see that's pretty pretty appropriate to the night of the Seder, which is the night we go out from Egypt. Absolute most typical of all the deliverances, all the redemptions we've had in Jewish history. However, that's not enough for the author. The author wants to look backwards and forwards in Jewish history and find every evidence of anything that happened in the middle of the night, which was a saving incident. And some of them, I have to say, are a little far-fetched. But okay, this is a poem. It's not a documented, catalogue of every time that God saved us at night. It's a poetic imagination. So the first two lines are, as I said, the intro. The many miracles were performed by you at light at the beginning of watches on this very night. So not only night, not only midnight, but the first night of Pesach has been flagged up here as the time of salvation throughout history. And what we'll do is we'll nip through it fast, and then we'll go back and look at it in more detail. So, first historical instance, Getzedet Nitzachok and Nechalak Lo Laila. You made the righteous convert when, this is a code name, Getzedek is for Abraham, when he divided his men at night. Okay, so that is the Battle of the Four Kings against Five Kings in the Book of Breishit. As I said, we're going to go back and do this in a bit more detail, but I just want to give you the sort of overview first. Number two, you, God, judged the king of Grah, Avimelech, in a dream at night. Another Abraham story. The king of Grah, Avimelech, confiscates Sarah and then is warned by God in a dream at night that she is a married woman. He better send her back double quick or bad things will happen to him. So a saving event. And he has the dream at night, so a night event. Then we have Hivchata Aramiva Emeshalila. You made the, actually, the Aramean, not the Syrian, tremble in the deep darkness of night. This is Levan. This is when he chases Jacob with bad intent and has a dream again, at, which obviously means at night when he's asleep, saying, don't touch Jacob. Again, as I say, we'll do the detail afterwards. Vayasa Yisrael Malach. And Israel struggled with an angel and overcame him at night. This is Jacob stroke Israel's fight with the angel, also in the Book of Breishit, where he, it's unclear who wins, but the angel doesn't exactly win. And the angel changes his name from Jacob to Israel. So again, we'll explore that one. But he is, in a sense, saved from the angel. Depends who you think the angel is too, and we're going to discuss that. Moving on to the real Pesach part of it, the firstborn of Patros, a code word for Egypt, you, God, smote at midnight, killing the firstborn. Okay, good Pesach story. They could not find their strength when they woke up at night. Again, does this refer to the loss of the firstborn, or does it refer possibly to something midrashic about the armies of Pharaoh had no strength to pursue the children of Israel, or did it badly? Those are the two Pesach lines. So those are, you could say, our most relevant lines. Then we move off into the Book of Judges. Tisat Nagid Haroshet Zilida Bechof Nailaila. The forces of the prince of Haroshet, that is bad, bad Sisera, who attacks the Israelites, were swept away by the stars of night. And again, we're going to look at the connection. Why is this night? Battles usually happen during the day. Moving quickly on, we move on to the 8th century.
Can I detect why it was? It seemed to be at night. There was a storm of mammoth proportions in the, if you look in the Navi, that chapter 4, and it was a mammoth proportions, and the skies turned black, and that's in fact why Sisera's chariots were mired in the mud. And then
there's descriptions of the brook of Kidron washing away.
That's the chariots. Right. Yes. And wash because of this mammoth storm, just to, yes, so everyone would see, it's consistent with his theme of night because it was day that turned into night.
Yes, you have to stretch it a little
in
bit.
In a poetic
in the reference as well. Way. When we do the detail, we'll see that there's a metaphor of the stars in their courses fought against Sisera, and that's probably where the night idea comes from.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, similar to we've all experienced, at least in the northern, in North America, we experienced the eclipse the other day. And so it was, the equivalent of day turning into night. Yeah.
Right. Okay. We're going to do a bit more of the detail some of these turn up as night, because some of them are really not obviously night at all when you read them in the Tanakh. But we'll find out the link in every case when we go back.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, not to worry at all. That's very useful. So we're in the days of Sennacherib, bad Assyrian king. He besieges Jerusalem. This is the Book of Kings already. Without respect, the cheeky one, Sennacherib, besieged Jerusalem, but you dried up his corpse at night. It's actually his corpses. It's the corpses of his soldiers. We'll explore that one in more detail too. Karabelu Mitzavov Ishron Laila. Bel, who is a heathen god, not actually Baal, but Bel, a Babylonian god, and its pedestal, the idol's pedestal, was thrown down at night. This again is a Daniel reference, and Daniel comes up again. To the man of delights, which is a code name for Daniel. In fact, it's not even a code name, it actually says that in the Book of Daniel. Secrets of visions were revealed at night. So we've got on to the Book of Daniel. You can see this is a real whistle, what's it called? Whistle stop tour through the Tanakh. Mishta kebeklech odesh neherag bo balayla. Belshazzar drank from the holy vessels of the temple that the Babylonians had stolen and was killed in the famous Belshazzar, just after the famous Belshazzar's feast, which also appears in the Book of Daniel. Nosha mi bo ariod potebi itute laila. A lot of Daniel here. He was saved, Daniel, from the lion's den. We're going to have to discuss this word itute. It's not clear. Fearsome dreams, interpretations, not quite sure, but we'll look at that. Sinanata agagi v'chatav sfarim b'layla, the Agagite, that's Haman, because he is a descendant of Agag. He nurtured hate or planted hate, and he wrote letters at night to encompass the destruction of the Jews. We're already on to the Purim story. Another bit of Purim story. Orat nitzachta alav benedashnat laila. You rose, God, and you conquered him with the lack of sleep of King Achashverosh. Again, we'll discuss that a bit at night. Pura tivrot l'shomema. Suddenly, we are basically out of history, and we are now into ideas about the future redemption. You will, it's not really you crushed, it's you will crush the wicked, and you will ask the watchman, Mami Laila, what from the night? Again, we'll explore that a bit further. Sarach kashomer v'sach atavok v'gam Laila, he will shout, it's not clear who, God, a prophet, will shout and say, night comes and the morning comes and also night. And then we have a prayer at the end. Bring close the day which is not night and not day. Let everybody know that day and night belong to you. Place watchmen on your city all day and all night. Ta'ir or yom chashkad laila. Make light like the day of the light of day, the darkness of night. And again, this is a prayer for the future. Okay. So that's the quick whiz through. We start with Abraham. We flag up Pesach. We have something almost, well, we have at least two of the patriarchs in here. No Isaac, but okay. Then we go through history of the period of the monarchy, ending up with Daniel and the Purim story, and then fast forward, turning around from the past to the future and looking at future redemption and asking for it to come. So you can see the theme here. What is interesting is how he's constructed this and the biblical ideas he's used here. So we start with an actual quote from the Torah, "Vayhi b'chetzi halayla." It was in the middle of the night. And if I whiz down, you'll see here, this is from Shmot. In the middle of the night, "Vayhi b'chetzi halayla," those very words, "the Lord struck down all the firstborn of the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the cattle." So peak Pesach text. Okay. And that is our text that introduces the whole thing and also forms the chorus. So again, we're going back to this idea of Pesach as the night on which salvation happens in the middle of that night. So that's our refrain. Okay. We also have, sorry, this is going to be a bit of up and downing. I'm afraid I couldn't get it all on one page. This idea, the beginning of watches on this very night. We also have another text talking about the night. And this is an interesting one also from Shmot. "Thus said the Lord, towards midnight," or "ka," "at about midnight, I will go forth among the Egyptians." And Rashi has a very interesting comment here. He says, it's actually the kachatzot is an infinitive verb, not a noun. It's not like midnight. It's like at the splitting, the halving of the night. And he comments that Moshe uses this odd expression at about the halving of the night because he doesn't know how Pharaoh and his magicians are going to calculate midnight. And their salvation doesn't come at the time which they think is midnight. They may be very rude and scorn it and say, well, God doesn't live up to his prophecies. His prophecy, he has no control over the time at which he does things. So Moshe is careful to say at about the time when God splits the night into two. But what is also interesting is this idea of God ripping the night in two halves. And that's something that we'll see at the end. This idea about splitting the night, not just a time marker, but a divine action. And that's going to pop up here and there. Okay, so having set our Pesach scene, if you like, and made the observation that God makes lots of miracles in the middle of the night, we then start on example one, Abraham. We said Gerd Sedek, the righteous convert, is Abraham. This is because Abraham starts from a world of idolatry and only recognizes the one true God at some later point in his life. And there's a lot of midrash about that. There's no information at all on Tanakh. So in some sense, he is a convert. He wasn't always a devotee of the one God. So this becomes his code name, one of his code names. The particular incident that happens, four kings are fighting against five kings. Abraham's nephew Lot gets kidnapped in the course of this conflict together with all his possessions. Abraham hears about this and immediately he gathers up 318 people from his household and he charges off to rescue Lot, which he does. So the interesting phrase here is Kenechelak lo laila, when the night was divided for him. Now, Rabbi Riskin's translated this as when Abraham divided his men at night, but actually that's not exactly what it says. And we're back to this idea of God splits the night and makes miracles. So at the time when God decides to switch from difficult situation to redemptive situation, God breaks that night open and puts the miracle in the middle, if you like. And that makes more sense. The medieval commentary by Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn also points out that Nitzach Tov sounds as though God is actually being victorious over Abraham. It's probably Hinzach Tov. God made Abraham victorious when he divided the night for him, when he did this divine trick of smashing the night into two and making the second half a redemptive act.
I wonder whether that's the origin of splitting the matzah into the afikoman.
Well, I'm sure you could link it. That actually is a very interesting idea because that is a very key point, the splitting. And I think you could probably link that idea into this idea of God splitting something and from that comes redemption. I would go with it. Do that this Seder. I think that's an excellent idea. So we move on with Abraham. We looked at this quite quickly, but this is the story of Sarah when she is confiscated, as it were, by Abimelech, king of Gram. He's been pretending that she is his sister. This is the second episode. The first episode, it happens with Pharaoh in Egypt. The second episode, it happens with King Abimelech. And again, why does this happen at night? Because Abimelech has a dream, and obviously that's when he's asleep, and obviously he'll sleep at night. So this is how it's tacked onto the night, that he is given this warning at night, and that warning saves Sarah, saves Abraham from this nasty situation. And we can actually look at here it is. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, b'chalom ha'layla, and said to him, you are to die because of the woman you've taken, for she is a married woman. So then we have a real night reference there. Sorry, I missed out this one, which I should have done. This is Abraham. He deployed against them at night. Vayechalek alehem laila. Again, this is the interpretation that Abraham is dividing up his soldiers or his household to do different things. But as I said, it has an alternative midrashic interpretation that God is doing the dividing of the night for them. Okay. Right. So that's Abraham. We have whizzed through Abraham and we get to, the life of Jacob. You made the Aramean, Lavan, tremble in the deep darkness of night. Now you remember that Jacob and his wives and children steal away and try to escape from Lavan, but he chases them and he catches them up and he confronts Jacob and he then says to him, this text here, number five, Lavan says to Jacob, I have it in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father said to me last night, Emish, beware of attempting anything with Jacob, good or bad. And he repeats this a little bit later. Had not the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac been with me. Sorry, this is Jacob speaking back to Lavan. You would have sent me away empty handed, but God took notice of my plight and the toil of my hands. And he gave me judgment last night. Amish, same word. Okay. So again, it's a night saving. And that word Emish or Amish is the little clue here. So this is really typical of Piyot. You get one distinctive word like emish, which is quite a rare word. And because of that, you're meant to go, ding, I know where that appears in the Torah. I know exactly which incident you are referring to. because otherwise it's pretty obscure. So this is why they're so difficult to understand, because how many of us know off the top of our heads that the word Emish comes from that particular incident and has all those connotations? We generally don't. This is why POTM are good study texts. You can unfold and pick out all the different little links. So we have another example of a night saving. Then we have this very mysterious one. This is Jacob's fight with the angel. Again, Israel struggled with an angel and overcame him at night. This is an odd one, because you would have thought there would be a text from Bereshit, but there isn't. There is a text from Hosea, a late prophet. He strove with an angel and prevailed. The other had to weep and implore him. At Bethel, Jacob would meet him there to commune with him. Why is this text used and not the original Bereshit one? It might be because it's more of a summary, and that's why the quote is taken out, he strove with an angel, Yasa Israel. It also, however, does have a link back in Bereshit, because when Jacob actually is preparing, or he doesn't know he's preparing, but the night before this incident, we do have a mention of night. The gift to his brother Esav went on ahead, while he, Jacob, remained in camp that night. And look at the words, Balaila Halhu, on that night. Not just any old night, that special night. So midrashically, obviously that was Pesach, because Balaila Halhu always means Pesach. Again, this is a midrashic assumption. The same night, Balaila Halhu, it's repeated, he arose and crossed the ford of the Yabok. Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him to the break of dawn. So here we have another really significant night saving. Who is the angel? Many, many commentators spend a lot of ink on this one. But there's a very, very common midrashic interpretation that the angel he fights with is actually the angel of guardian angel of Esav, his brother. And this, so that he would be wrestling the spiritual protector of his brother, and by prevailing, he actually is saved from great danger. And it's a foretaste of the fact that when he does meet Esav, he is not going to be beaten or captured or killed by Esav. He's going to be saved from the danger of Esav. There is, of course, also a classic interpretation that somehow the angel is God's angel. And this is Israel, the people, or the ancestor, and the people who wrestle with God and with man. That we have a tumultuous relationship with the divine, which I think is pretty true if you look at Jewish history generally. So you can take it either way. It seems, what does it seem? I don't know. I think you would need the Esav one to get the best out of it being a saving situation. If it's a confrontation with God, then, well, you know, obviously God's going to win always. But we do pretty well, you could say, in that particular struggle. Sandra, have you got a comment there?
Yes. One second. Thank you. And since they were twins, if Jacob and Esav were twins, and we go with the midrash that the angel was his twin brother, then it's not too much of a little hop to say he was struggling with himself.
Yes. And there are very psychological, more modern analyses that absolutely see that as Esav as the dark shadow of Yaakov.
So the saving is interesting. Yes. The saving then.
Yes. Saving from himself, yes. That's it's a very mysterious episode, but it's interesting they've managed to weave it in here. And of course, the reason it's woven in here is because it says Balaila Hahu on that night. So of course, it comes
in. Don't we also think Balaila Hahu Nadadash Natamela? We think
we'll get to that one. Oh, yeah, oh, okay. Wait a few verses. We are getting there. Yes.
Got it.
They are great. They have every instance of any night thing, it gets it's woven marvelous, in marvelous. Here. Yana is on top of this. Yeah. So. right, so that's Israel. Now we get to the obvious stuff. Yeah, the firstborn of Patros. Why call Egypt Patros? Because we love code names, and in the prophets there is reference to Patros as an area in southern Egypt. It comes in Ezekiel and Jeremiah and Isaiah, and Patros is an Egyptian reference. So let's make a code word. It makes everything much more exciting. So the firstborn of Patros are the firstborn of Egypt, and that's pretty obvious because we know that one.
It's could I go back a minute and ask you who the gift is that the in gift. The previous one?
The gift, you, wait a moment. I can't see a gift.
Yeah, that she's asking about the Jacob gift to Esau. He sent the gift on ahead. It was
Yes, that's when he's going to see his brother Esau, and he sends out lots and lots of camels and who knows what to pacify his
shrine. I thought it was a person. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So the firstborn of Petros and losing their strength are obviously connected, and then we're right back to Shemot. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them with his chael, his might, that I may gain glory through Pharaoh and all his chael. So again, it's a reference. I think probably it's in there to try and get the Red Sea splitting in as well, because famously Pharaoh's army is defeated at the Red Sea. It's less obvious that the Red Sea miracle happened at night. I think Yanai is on thin ice here, but what the heck? The major Pesach incident is definitely at night. They all leave in the middle of night. At night, God strikes the firstborn. So, you know, fair enough. I think we can allow a little tiny bit of them. Slight ricketiness on the line. They could not find their strength when they woke up at night. Unless
can I ask a question
that I don't actually know about that. Yeah. Can we actually keep the questions for the end? Because otherwise I'm not
sorry.
Okay. So hang on to the question. Yeah. Ask me at the end, because I hate to sort of finish off. Okay. On to the book of Judges, Sisera. Again, this is nasty Sisera, the army captain of Yavin, king of Canaan. He lives at a place called Haroshet Hagoyim, and this is why he's called Negid Haroshet, the prince of Haroshet. So again, it's a code name based on where he lives. In the Song of Deborah, we have the victory of the prophetess Deborah and Barak, the general of the Israelites, over Sisera and his army. And very famously, it says, the stars fought from heaven, from their courses they fought against Sisera. When do you see the stars? You see them at night. So this happened at night. Again, Midrashic sort of thinking. In the original, it's a metaphor. Obviously, the stars didn't come down to fight. This is a metaphor, but that never stopped the Midrashic yet. So, okay, saving event happened at night. No problem there at all. Then we have... we are already on to Sennacherib. So we leap forward several centuries to the reign of Hezekiah, king of Judah, and the lifetime of Isaiah. This is after the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, has fallen. Only the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah, is still surviving. And the Assyrians, led by their king Sennacherib, have taken the city of Lachish. And a high official, Rav Shakeh, has been sent up to Jerusalem to tell Hezekiah to surrender, since his God will not save him. And he says rude things about God, which, of course, is very bad. So Mecharef, to insult, the insulting one, waved his hand. Nofef is to wave your hand in an insulting manner. Ivui. Ivui is a very strange word. And nobody quite knows what it would mean, except Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn points out that in one of the Psalms, it has a Jerusalem connotation. So let's see if I can find it here. Yeah. The Lord has chosen Iva Zion. He has desired it for his seat. So it seems to be a code word for Jerusalem. The part of the story, which is in the second book of Malachim, chapter 19, if you want to look it up. Perhaps, says Hezekiah to the prophet Isaiah, your Lord God will take note of all the words of the Rav Shakeh, the Assyrian official, whom his master, the king of Assyria, has sent to blaspheme the living God, and we'll meet at judgment. So that is the insulting bit, the idea that this man comes and insults Mecharef and waves his hand insultingly at Ivui, which is something in Jerusalem. What happens? The angel God strikes the Assyrian camp and kills 185,000 soldiers. That was, and in the morning, they get up, the inhabitants of Jerusalem get up, and it says, they were all dead bodies. Okay, so obviously the miracle happened at night. And we have that little figarav, his corpses. That is what actually links it to the story. These tiny words of what tie it to a biblical story. And you just have to know. Again, this is why we need to sort of study a bit. Otherwise, it's not obvious at all. Then we move forward to the book of Daniel. We have quite a few of Daniel. This one, Bel, it should be Bel, not Baal, I don't know why, and the idol and its pedestal were thrown down in the darkness of night. This is one of Daniel's dreams. He dreams of a figure that with its head of gold and shoulders of silver and legs of bronze and feet of clay, which is where the phrase comes from. And as he watches, the whole idol crashes down and breaks. So Bel is genuinely a Babylonian god, and here he is seen as you know, the whole Babylonian might crumbling. He represents his people, the Babylonians. So this is a vague reference, not precise reference, to the collapse of the Babylonians eventually and the freeing of the people of Israel when the Persians invaded and took over the Babylonian Empire. Then we have an explicit Daniel reference. Ish Hamodot, the man of delights, is what Daniel is actually called in this in his own book, and he sees secrets by night. And because Daniel is a book of apocalyptic, it's a book of prophecies of the future, he sees a lot of saving stuff. He sees mysterious visions, especially in the second half of the book, and much of them are about future redemption. So we're already getting a bit of a link between the past and future, but we have a past prophet who has night visions of saving this. So again, we're on our theme. And we get to the famous Belshazzar. Some of you may know Rembrandt's famous picture, Belshazzar's Feast. Belshazzar is a Babylonian king. And in the fifth book of the fifth chapter of Daniel, there's a story of how he makes a great feast and he drinks out of the vessels from the temple, which the Babylonians have taken back. Here we have Klei Kodesh, the holy vessels. That's a reference to that. And that very night, he is slain and his kingdom falls. So again, this is a saving for the Jews who are exiled into Babylon. And this is also, by the way, the famous incident where a hand appears and writes on the wall. You may know the expression, the writing on the wall. A hand appears and it writes, "Mene, mene, tekel upharsin. God has found you wanting, weighed you and found you wanting, and your kingdom will be taken away from you by the Medes and the Persians." Well, that did actually happen in 539, and the Persians invaded and destroyed the Babylonian Empire, and that's when the Jews were allowed to go back to the land of Israel, ending the exile. Not that all of them went, but they went. Those who went back rebuilt the second temple. So again, a saving incident: the end of Babylon, the victory of the Persians, the fall of Belshazzar. So again, saving very clearly. Then we're on to Purim. Haman, descendant of Agag, you may remember that he plots with his at home to write letters asking for the destruction of the Jews. And the book actually tells you he does that on the 13th of Nisan. So, well, there you are. Bang. Right just before Pesach. So it's Pesach connected again. And then we have this famous story about the king's sleep lacking one night, attributed to the divine. Very famously, God does not appear in the book of Esther, except in sort of veiled hints. At the beginning of chapter 6, we have Balailahu on that night. The king's sleep was lacking. And he calls for the court records to be brought to put him to sleep, presumably. And he's reminded of the role that Mordecai played in saving the king's life, stopping a conspiracy earlier on. And that sets in motion the rise of Mordecai and the consequent fall of Haman and salvation. So again, Balaila Hahu, on that night. Okay, this is just after when Haman is writing his letters on the 13th of Nisan. Obviously, on that night, we are talking Pesach night. This is when it happened. Quite clear. If you're a Midrashic rabbi, that's absolutely obvious. So that's you rose and beat Haman by not letting the king sleep at night. And then we have a general statement. We've now sort of finished the past catalogue of saving events at night. And we've got a little transition here where, in more general terms, we move towards the future. Pura tidroch, you will tread the winepress. Now, the image of God treading grapes in a winepress and the juice that looks like blood running out is a metaphor for God's striking down of the enemies of Israel. It comes from Isaiah chapter 63. And you may know it from the Shabbat Zemir Dro Yikra, yeah? Droch Pura Batoch Botzra. So it's exactly the same image there. So the verse in Isaiah starts off, "Who is this who comes from Edom with crimsoned garments from Botzra?" And the whole prophecy is a prophecy of God's anger against Edom and his punishment. The garments are crimson because they're stained with blood, and the grape juice is described as, you know, splattering as it were, God's clothes. It's a very human metaphor there. That in Midrashic and medieval code, Edom is equated with Esav and comes to represent, first of all, the Roman Empire, and secondly, in the medieval times, Christianity. So if this is a code, again, we've got this being written in the early medieval period, at a time when Midrash is using the word Edom in this way. So this reference to the treading of the winepress of Edom is clearly, we're moving into future redemption from current enemies mode here. And then we also have another idea from Isaiah, the idea of the watchman at the night. And Isaiah chapter 21, we have one calls to me out of Seir, which is Edom territory. Watchman, what of the night? Watchman, what of the night? So that's, again, perhaps the people of Israel saying, what is happening? What is going to happen? Again, Edom seems to be coming here. So Shomem Amilayla, watchman, what of the night, can be a code word for what is going to happen with the Edomites of today. And Ephraim of Bonn, whose commentary we've been using, understands this as a question asked by the Jewish people. God, what will you bring out of this night? We are in the night of exile and oppression. What are you going to bring? Shomer Yisrael, the watchman, the guard of Israel, what are you going to do about it? And the answer, so you could understand this as what is going to happen to us in this night of exile. And we have the answer, Tzarach Kashomer. God calls back like a watchman with a loud voice. And he says, morning will come and also night. And this can be interpreted as morning, redemption will come, and night for your enemies. So again, coded references that aren't obvious if you are not initiated into what this is talking about. So this hope for redemption, this questioning of God saying, how do we get out of this night? And God saying, I will bring you morning, takes us to a full-on prayer, still with biblical references. Actually, I should just show you the Isaiah ones. The Duma pronouncement, a call comes to me from Seir, watchman, what of the night? Watchman, what of the night? The watchman replied, morning came and so did night. If you would inquire, inquire, come back again. Which sounds as though God is saying, just think about it for a bit and you will find the interpretation. So the prayer at the end, Karavion, brings close the day which is neither Yom Velayla, neither day nor night. So everyone will know the day is yours and also the night. Set up guards for your city for the day and the night, that bright as day may shine the darkness of night. Those all come from biblical verses and we can look at them here, and they are verses of salvation. The first one is from Zechariah. There shall be one day, only the Lord knows when, of neither day nor light. Lo yom v'lo laila, which is the pick-up quote in the piyut. And there shall be light at eventide. So again, if you're regarding light as redemption and night as tribulation, this is, again, an easily understood reference to future redemption. In Psalms, we have the day is yours, the night also. Aflecha laila, which is the quote in the piyut line. It was you who set in place the orb of the sun. In other words, you, God, rule everything. The entire universe is yours, day and night. And then we have the watchman reference. Isaiah is very fond of watchmen. Upon your walls, Al-Chometaich, Jerusalem, I have set watchmen who will never be silent all the day and all the night. Koleyom v'kolalaila, which is our pickup line in the poem. O you, Lord's remembrances, take no rest and give no rest to him until he establish Jerusalem and make her renowned on earth. Which again itself is a plea for redemption. So the image, the metaphor of the watchman who watches for the morning is very much us watching or asking God to bring the morning. And then that last line comes from Psalms, Tehillim. Darkness will not be dark for you. Your night will be light as day. Balaila kayom ya'ir, which again is the tie-in to the poem. Darkness and light are the same. In other words, to God, tribulation, redemption, he's the master of everything. So we don't need to worry. So we end with this impassioned call for God to bring the day, the morning, as soon as possible, which seems particularly poignant this year, I have to say. We also have some other links to the idea of the night of Pesach. You know, it's commonly called Leil Shimurim, the night of protection or the night of guarding. And we have other midrashic references to this idea, or the idea of the significance of night as the context of when redemption comes. You know, it's a bit like the saying, it's always darkest before the dawn. So the poets and prophetic imagery generally see night as the opportunity for redemption. It's not much point redeeming us when everything's going fine. What you need to be redeemed from is crisis and deep night. So it's quite natural pairing. And if we look at the Targum Yonatan, this is the Aramaic translation. Every time I press it, it goes blue, I don't know why. This is of Tanakh. Targum Yonatan actually is of the Chumash. And it notes four nights are written in a book of remembrance before the master of the universe. The first is the creation of the world, which again is light out of darkness, day out of night. The second involves Abraham, probably the ones we were looking at in the poem. The third is in Egypt, where their firstborn died and Israel's firstborn were protected. The fourth is for saving Israel from among the nations. This may be all the Edom-related watchmen, what are the night stuff. And all of them are called nights of watching, or Leil Shimurim, watching for God to save Israel. So not just nights of protection, but nights of us sitting up and waiting for redemption. And so too to redeem them from exile in all future generations. So we have a pattern, an archetype of the night as the setting for salvation. Pesach is a very obvious example, but Yanai has created the sequence of examples and said to us it's something that comes back again and again and again. This will be useful knowledge for the future. And if we look at one other Midrashic comment, why did God call it a Leil Shimurim? And this is the phrase from the Torah, a night of watching. On this night, great things were done for the righteous, just as had been done for Israel in Egypt. On it, he saved Hezekiah. That was our Assyrian episode with the cheeky Sennacherib waving at Jerusalem. He saved Hananiah and his friends. This is from the book of Daniel. Saved Daniel from the lion's den. Actually, did we miss Daniel from the lion's den? I think we did, bother. And on it, the Messiah and Elijah will be revealed. And of course, you will know that part of the Seder involves waiting for Elijah and seeing if he's at the door. We pour the extra cup and we go and have a little look to see, has he turned up? Because again, as the Haftorah for Shabbat HaGadol tells us in the book of Malachi, Elijah will come before the great day of redemption. So Elijah is the harbinger, the forerunner, and that's why we're looking to him too. Let me just go back to Daniel because we missed the Daniel lion's den. I'm sorry about that. Where's Daniel lion's den? Yes, Daniel was saved from the lion's den and interpreted fearsome dreams of the night. Again, why would you think that was so? I have not the actual text here, because he shut up in the lion's den, and in the morning the king goes to see him and shouts, "Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, are you still there?" And Daniel says, "Yeah, I'm fine. God protect me from the lions all night long." So it's another nighttime saving, just to sort of add it in here. Okay, so I think we can. If I get out of share. There we are. Oh, has that stopped the show? Yes, it has. Okay. So, there we are. Okay. So, let's see if I can just move that. There we are. Yeah. So, we've seen this poem has managed to negotiate all the constraints of having to do an acrostic, having to do one line per letter, having to do groups of three for the chorus, having to get in biblical references in one line with about six or seven words. You've got to set the setting, the scene for an entire biblical story just by the use of careful marker words, if you like. And it also manages to actually produce a sort of coherent narrative. It's saying, watch out on special nights, because that's when you will see redemption. When it is darkest, when it seems most hopeless, when it really is the thick of night, that's when you will see the morning. That's when you will see, you hear the watchman crying, and when things will happen. It happened in the past. We've given you all these stories. Pray that it will happen in the future, but this is the pattern that we're watching out for. So it's a very, very carefully crafted poem. I think it's quite amazing, and its themes and its message are eminently suitable for Say the Night, and I think particularly this year. And it really is absolutely amazing that you could actually do that with, so if you actually count the number of Hebrew words, they're ridiculously small, that they make this very convincing argument. I'm just going to look at some of the comments in the chat and see if I can relate to those. Does the watchman relate to the Song of Songs? Definitely in Midrashic understanding, the watchman is interpreted very much in this way, as harbingers of change in fate. You'd have to look at the various Midrashic, Shoshim Rabbah would be the place to look. But yes, that's a classic. The moment you get a Shomer somewhere, you get these sorts of interpretations. And of course, yes, as Noreen's pointed out, it is read on Pesach. Yep.
We have the phrase of Yenevelt, which is not Lo Yom Velo Laila. It's Yenevelt because it's Yanai's world.
That's a nice one. Yeah. I think Yenevelt just means the other world in Yiddish. But it's a nice.
I'm being very poetic.
It's an excellent drush. Yeah.
Thank you.
I wouldn't claim it as a historical link, but it's an excellent drush indeed. Yes. And where in Targum Yonatan is the quote from? You know, I cannot remember because I collected these sources quite a while back. It could be that I found it via Ephraim of Bonn, and he may have given the reference, but he probably quoted it, and I probably took it out of him without going back to the original and looking. I'm wondering whether it might turn up actually at the point where Leil Shimurim is mentioned. And maybe it's an explanatory comment that's added on there. I probably need to go and check that and find out exactly where it's from. So I'm sorry, I haven't got that at all. Didn't we leave Egypt at high noon so the Egyptians couldn't say we sneaked away at night? That's a midrash. Yeah. But it does seem to say that we actually start leaving at night because the firstborn is struck at night, and on that very night, it says in Torah, God took out the Tzibot Yisrael, the forces of Israel. So it does seem, it implies that it happens at night. And
I'm talking to you from Beit Shemesh. A little bit night here, not quite midnight, not Hatzilah yet. We have a peer group here has been functioning for the last 3 years. We call it the Dead Pew Society. And thank you, Robin Williams. And we discussed actually this peer last Sunday night. I would just like to suggest a melody that everyone knows and goes very well with this piyut. It's a melody that's taken from Akdamot, and we actually use it, exact same melody, for Kiddush on Yom Tov. In fact, we used it at the beginning of the Seder. It's also the same melody that's used to call up the Chatan Torah and Chatan Bereshit on Simchat Torah. That's right. It goes very well with this.
Maybe I'll try it this year.
I'm not going to sing it for you, but it goes very well. And if as at a Seder, if one person leads it and everybody then the chorus says, Lila, 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 as a refrain, it goes very well. I would suggest that.
Yeah. Excellent idea. Well, that's great. I'll definitely try that this year. If I can persuade my family to sing it, because every year I go, can't we do this piyut? I know something about it. And they'll go, no, we want to go to sleep.
Lila. It goes very well.
Right. I got to try that, definitely. A couple of people have also pointed out this idea of splitting. The idea that twins like Jacob and Esau who are non-identical, are like a person who's split. The Red Sea is split. The night being divided. I think these are all linked. This idea of the ripping apart of the normal fabric of existence so that something miraculous can come out, in almost like a birth.
We have the joy in Israel. We say both Purim on one night.
Yes, of course. Yes. So, yes. I've never looked at the second one. I probably should. But yes, they are. The trouble is, you know, if we had them earlier on in the Seder, people would be more interested in them. It's just by that stage, everyone's full and they're sleepy and they just want to go to bed, which is sad. But I think that this is why, you know, this is why I wanted to do a shiur about it, because now we can enjoy it without being well past midnight and desperate and, you know, just not interested anymore. So I think actually that's the answer to things that, that are the things at the end of the Seder, definitely.
Could I ask about your name, Butch Hertz? Because my last name is Butch Hertz. I really, I don't meet too many, so I just wanted to know if
It's my husband's name, and there aren't very many in the world at all, so it's probably some sort of relationship.
Where was his family from, if I may ask?
Latvia and Ukraine and a bit of Lithuania.
Oh, okay.
So it's Poland. probably something like that. Yes, almost certainly there is a link. Yeah,
the Magid of Koznitz goes back, but anyway, okay. But thank you. I don't want to interrupt the vein. Okay,
So I think what we've got here is we have within the constraints very formal and rigid constraints of the piyut, this sort of, you know, crossword almost formula. We have a remarkably poetic set of ideas with a real theological and spiritual message, which does. It by examining Jewish history, it creates parallels that we can learn from or we can expect for the future. And we can appeal to God to repeat this process of splitting the night and bringing out redemption, which I really, really hope is what we're going to get this year, as we need it so much. So perhaps that's something to hang on to, this very, in a way, this very founded, this very deep in our tradition idea of the splitting of the dark, the emergence of the light, and how that is really, really a central theme of Pesach.
What came of discussion is that this is completely an Ashkenazic experience. It doesn't exist in Eidot HaMizrach.
Yes, I think Eidot HaMizrach do a different one altogether. I'm sorry.
They don't have it at all.
Well, I can understand why, given the fact it's so late. Okay, so we're out of time. Sandra, would you like to just make a final comment, because I don't want to keep people
beyond. Yes, thank you very much. And about Esther, when it says, if you don't mind, back to her for a second, it says that she's taken at night and she was returned in the day. And of course, that was her test, because if he didn't pick her, she would have been consigned to the limbo of the harem forever and ever, never to see the light of day again. And so the fact that God had to have done his magic that night, between the nighttime when she was taken and the daytime she was given, and they do refer to her as Ayelet HaShachar.
Yeah, again, midrashically, not in the
midrashic reference to her is the gazelle of the dawn.
It fits into this.
It fits right in.
So I think, you know, it's not my imagination.
Well,
it's
sure. Actually, there also, in the piyut. The beginning of the Geula, the first Geula is Purim, and then it sort of leads in 30 days later to the Geula of Pesach. So I think the link of between the two and the dawn and the nighttime, it's so rich. This was wonderful. Really, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. So I hope that's given you something to think about. And those of you who are really strong-minded and get that far and actually sing it, now you can explain to everyone what it's about. And those of us who just, you know, fall over after the meal and can barely bench and go to bed, at least we've discussed it, we've thought about it, we've done a bit of preparation, and we've got that idea also guiding us through. It might be an idea looking for some of those themes in the first part of the Haggadah, and actually seeing, I think you'll find hints here and there throughout. So have a wonderful Pesach, everybody.
Yes, a wonderful Pesach to you.
And may we all merit to see redemption. Amen. Speedily in our days. And I hope I'll be teaching again sometime.
Absolutely. Please. Look forward to that.
Thank you, everybody. Lovely to see you all.
Thank you.
Do you have an email address I could send you something to?
Yes, I'll just put it in the chat. I may be a bit slow to reply because Pesach cleaning has kicked in.
Yes, no, it did come in. It came in the chat. Thank you. I want to link this Yanai's song to dark energy, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, sounds fascinating. Okay, look forward.
Good.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you all. Bye.
Thank you.